Hey everyone, welcome to the Worship Artistry Podcast. My name is Jason Houtsma, and with me as always is Mr. Daniel Ornelas.
Live and in the flesh. Well, not really, actually. On Skype.
On Skype, but looking healthy, smiling.
Alive and well. It's awesome.
It's a whole new world. How have you been, my friend?
I've been really good, recovering from the dreaded COVID. It's been a journey, I'll tell you that much. But and not being able to taste stuff really does suck.
Oh yeah, is that still happening?
Oh yeah, it's so incredible. Like I was out with my family a couple of nights ago, and I was eating crispy beef tacos with cheese, and my son was eating chicken fingers and fries. I took the fries and I ate a mouthful of fries, and then I took the taco that I was eating. And if you blindfolded me, I wouldn't be able to tell you which one was which. That's how bad it is.
My kids said if they got COVID and they lost their sense of smell, they would just eat a ton of healthy food and just try and get like all the healthy food in, since they don't like to eat it normally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is a bit like that almost. Like when we went out to eat the other night, I'm like, I'm not ordering anything expensive. It's just a waste of money. And my friend was like, why don't you go on just a crazy detox where the stuff tastes terrible and just go for it right now? Like, it's not a bad idea.
It's a good move. I mean, I look at my kids and I'm like, you guys have nothing to complain about. Like when I was growing up, we had, you know, my parents were decent cooks, but we had the same five meals every week. You know, it's just like,
yeah,
Tuesday is this, Wednesday is this, Thursday is this. I'm like, you have these parents that like cook all this amazing food and it's awesome. And then you just won't eat it. You're just like, no, I only want to eat mac and cheese.
That's the vibe. That's my son. He likes noodles and he likes steak. That's it.
Me and your son would get along, but I like a lot of other things too. Those are both delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Well, speaking of delicious, Daniel, we taught a song last week. We did Sovereign Grace's version of All Creatures of Our God and King. Let's give it a listen. Creatures of our God and King, lift up your voice and with us sing. You know, it was funny. It's been a while since we've done a song with a key change in it. Like, when was the last time you did a key change?
Jeez, who knows? Michael W. Smith song that we did, remade, Missing Person.
What?
We, like 363 remade a Michael W. Smith song called The Missing Person. Have you ever heard that song?
I don't.
It's a
I don't know.
Anyway, it's a famous Michael W. Smith song. There was a tribute record that came out, and Delirious and all the bands. We did tribute songs for, like, we remade all these Michael W. Smith songs, and it came out. I can't remember. It must have been 2004 or somewhere around about there. But that was the song we did. It had a big, massive key change in it. it's the last song I can remember playing with a key change.
and it's interesting because it does jump from C to D. And it's very simple. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of times people remake hymns and it's like, okay, what's the story on this? But they actually did a really nice job because they take those first two verses from the original hymn and then they add two mm-hmm. different ones that I wasn't familiar with. And that's where the key change happens, and they kind of fill it out. And it was super fun to play. They had some, I was learning your bass part because you were unable to do the tabs. And so I was tabbing out your bass parts, which were... there's some cool parts in there. I feel like I learned. I know bass and I know the guitar for this song.
Yeah, you do.
I probably
know the drums too.
I was very fortunate in that it's probably one of the easiest electric guitar lessons I've ever done. I mean, it's basically following chords, and then there's like one kind of big riff and stuff. But it's a really great refresh of an old hymn, because I love that song, but it can be. It's very illustrative, right? Like it's kind of creating mm-hmm. all these pictures, and they kind of bring it more back to like a more like traditional hymn layout, and they did a nice job on it.
Yeah, that sounded awesome.
And that guy's got the deepest voice. As soon as he started singing, I was like, wait, what? And I was wondering how Chris was going to do it, because he's got such a high voice. But he nailed it. He did it great.
He did.
You know, he's just pushing
he's a vegan.
You know, Daniel, there's more to him than that he's a vegan. That's not the answer to all of it.
Every time he does something super powerish, I always think that must be his veganism.
that must be. Well, yeah. Well, our guest today, I don't actually know if he's a vegan, but his name is Matt Stinton, and he's a worship leader out in Portland, Maine. And he's done a bunch of songwriting courses. He worked with Bethel Music kind of in the mid-teens. Is that what you say for 2010? That sort of thing, the teens? Is
that yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
So he has had a lot of experience there. And it's interesting because what we ended up talking about for the most part was a creativity and like what it is to be an artist and then go become a worship leader, because they are two different things. And how do you pull those artistic parts of yourself, which still really keep you alive and keep you inspired? How do you bring those things into a worship setting and without leaving all your people behind and, you know, getting way out there? And it's very appropriate. I went and saw Wilco on Saturday night. It was my first concert I got to go to post COVID. It was great. And they still have it. They still got it, but they're so creative and interesting in the way they play. And so it was just kind of led us into that conversation. So without further ado, Matt Stinton. Hi, Matt. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Well, I am. We were just talking about what a cool space you're in. It's you're in Maine, right?
Yes, sir. Portland, Maine.
That's kind of a magical area.
It is, and it's getting super, super popular. I think about half of New York City moved here in the last 6 months. So it's blowing up for sure.
Yeah, half of California has moved to Bellingham, Washington, and so all our housing prices are skyrocketing, and all of a sudden we have traffic.
Yep, that sounds familiar.
Well, cool, man. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I thought maybe we could just start off. Can you tell me a little bit about just kind of your worship leading journey, how you've where you're at now and kind of how you've gotten there?
Yeah, well, where I'm at now is I am on staff at my little church up here in Maine with my wife. We are both co-worship pastor and co-worship pastor for those Office fans out there. You might recognize that that awkward phrasing. And we've been here for about 5 years. I think for me, like, worship leading started when I was, led a little bit here and there through high school, but it was after college where I got offered a worship leader position at a church. And it was not really something that I was interested in doing because I had bigger plans. And I mean, music was always my passion, and it was my plan to, like, you know, be a pro and tour and travel and do all of that. And being a worship leader didn't seem like it was going to work out for that, you know, that side of things at all. And, you know, one thing led to another, and the opportunities kept opening up, and I ended up out at Bethel Church in Reading and got involved with the label there. Hung out with those guys for a few years, did some recording, did some touring, and helped oversee the worship department there for a while. I was the worship team manager for a couple years. And then we decided, Carla and I, my wife, Carla, we decided to relocate to New England, which is where she's from. And we wanted to be somewhere that was closer, you know, closer to family, closer to her family. And so we're about an hour and a half away from her family down in Boston, and it's just a nice place to live. And here we are.
So you were saying, like, oh, I had bigger plans. A lot of worship leaders I know, they didn't actually start out as worship leaders. They kind of
got
opened that door for them. What did you have to wrestle with in that process?
Oh man, everything. I mean, it was. That was a big struggle, because it felt like I was putting my dreams aside. And so I think there's probably a lot of people that can relate to that. And I think in a lot of ways, when we, you know, talk about following the Lord, it's really, there's a lot of times where we're going to have to lay some things aside, because God has a bigger picture. But what we don't understand always in those painful moments is that God's picture is so much better than our tiny little scrap of a dream. And so I know for me in those moments, it was really challenging. I remember it was my senior year in college, and that's when I got offered the job. And so it meant leaving the band I was playing in with, you know, good friends of mine. And I remember sitting in my car one night and just like stuck in that spot of indecision of feeling like I was supposed to take the job, but I didn't want to, but it wasn't really clear. And so, you know, just sitting in my car in the parking lot behind the dorm, just yelling it out with God, like, what's going on? Like, why aren't you answering me? You know, like, so dramatic, like a dramatic college kid. And so, I mean, there definitely was a bit of a struggle. And, you know, but when it came down to it, it was the clearer option. And, you know, it just, we all discover, you know, the right decisions are, you know, in our own way. But, you know, when it came down to it for me, it was clear, like, this is the right decision for me. This is what I should be doing. Didn't necessarily make it easy, but, you know, looking back, I know, like, yeah, I would have had some fun if I had stayed in that town with my friends, but in that city. But where God took things has been so much more fulfilling. And that probably sounds familiar for a lot of people.
I remember for myself at one point having this very like clear vision of what I wanted to create. And like 10 years later, I found myself almost in that identical situation, and I realized like God was fulfilling a promise to me, and I didn't even recognize it because it didn't look like I imagined. And I'm sitting like, no, we're sitting here having worship sets with all these amazing artists, and everybody's learning and working together. And it doesn't look like I pictured when I was in college, but at the same time, it's like God has still been moving me towards that in a way that I just didn't recognize it, you know, at the time. So then so it sounds like you're pretty artistic guy. Working in a church environment, there's a lot of push and pull there, right? There's kind of like, you have this like creative artisticness about you, and you're like, I want to go make this thing. But at the same time, we're doing worship songs, we're writing worship songs, we're teaching worship songs, we're leading with worship songs. And a lot of times we get the idea that creativity has to get put in a box over here because, well, this is a tool. How do you bring creativity into what you're doing?
I think, you know, when it comes to like leading worship, I think there are a lot of ways. I think there's a definite balance, and I know this is a question I've been asked often when it comes to, you know, how is it that you know, can you lead worship and be creative at the same time? And the answer is definitely yes. I mean, I've used like in the past, I've used vocoders like live in worship, and super fun, and like looping and layering vocals and doing a lot of things like that live in worship. And really what it comes to is balance. Like so many other things, it's a matter of balance and making sure that when you are doing these creative things that you're remembering that you're leading a bunch of people that are fairly not creative as a rule and not super musical as a rule. So that being said, it's really important for us as worship leaders to remember if we're getting a little too creative, we might start actually losing the people that we're trying to lead. First and foremost, we're there to facilitate an encounter, to facilitate an interaction between God and his people. And so we can't lose sight of that in our drive to be creative. However, we also shouldn't just give up our creativity and say, well, worship is not a spot for being creative, that's completely not right either. Because I think, you think about it, God, pretty creative, right? One could say that he's a pretty creative well, I can't say person because he's not a person, but you know what I mean. A being. He's super creative. He's so creative that he created creativity. Pretty creative guy. On top of that, then he made us in his own image. So God is all about creativity. He loves it. He, you know, he is still creating. If we believe that he is the same yesterday, today, and forever, then he's still creating just as much now as he ever has, in ways that we can see, in ways that we can't see yet. But that being said, and all that to say, creativity and worship completely go together. But it is important to keep that balance so that you can explore, you can try some new, or you know, everything from new arrangements to new instrumentation. Like I've used like xylophones and our little glockenspiels, not xylophones, glockenspiels, and just, you know, all sorts of little, you know, different types of instruments in worship, just because I wanted to see what would happen. And you know, if you frame it all still in the context of presenting corporate worship songs in a way that people can still follow, that's a really important element, is that last bit, in a way that people can still follow. But it's definitely doable.
Like, I like that idea of like what you're saying about movement, about being able to like, well, we get to try different things and carry people along and just make sure we don't lose them, which everybody kind of has to do if they're going to connect with any audience.
Right.
So you used the word fun when you were talking about like leading, and how do you keep it fun for you?
You know, that's a great question, because I think it's really easy for us to fall into routine. And when you fall into routine, it's easy to lose that fun piece. I think there's a few things that can kind of steal the fun out of leading worship, and you know, that losing track of why you're there is one of those things. When something becomes routine and you forget that, you know, literally anything could happen at any minute. Again, God is creative, and you don't know what sort of creative thing might happen in the service, or you don't know where someone may get touched in the middle of the service and healed. Because I mean, we hear these stories about people getting healed in worship. Nobody prayed for them. They were just singing and all of a sudden their pain went away. You know, this stuff happens. And I think if we lose track of why we're there, it's easy to lose that fun element. And I think it's also easy to lose track of our fun when we take things a little too seriously. And I think the major struggle for worship leaders and musicians alike, when it comes to worship, is we have a tendency to try to get our identity, like our value, out of what we're doing instead of who we are. And we are in worship because we're trying to get something out of it, we're trying to get notoriety or status out of it, then we're completely doing things the wrong way. We're completely, like, we're missing the point. Like, we're not there to make a name for ourselves. We're there to, again, facilitate an encounter and help make God known more. So I think it's, when we get that, we take things a little too seriously that way, and we're trying to, like, you know, we're trying to get that position, get that fame. That is when things start becoming stressful, especially if things don't go the way that we hoped they would. Then we can start being critical, and, you know, we have a bad set and our world falls apart because, well, now I had a bad set, I made this mistake, or, you know, we train wrecked, somebody else made a mistake and made me look bad. All this stuff is like, if you take it too seriously, you know, it's a bummer. It's a bummer, because you know what? Mistakes can actually be fun, because, you know, who likes making a mistake? You know, not most people, but if you just choose to smile and laugh about it and move on, you're going to be in much better shape.
I was listening to a writer today who said he just prays for one humiliation every day. Just like, it's just necessary for him, you know, just like have it be, have it just be a part of his life. That was interesting. Like you brought up the kind of the drive for fame and like popularity and our identity and stuff like that. You mentioned that you were at Bethel and, you know, here is a church community. That's a church that is now like you, I mean, we've taught like a million, we taught a bunch of their songs. Like there are people that are known now for doing this, right? How do you walk that line of making God known and being out there and at the same time staying in a place of.
No, I mean, it's definitely real. I mean, it's a real struggle. And I mean, in a lot of ways you kind of have to learn for yourself. Man, because I've been in that boat, and it is really challenging. And you can tell somebody, you know, this is the trick. You know, you keep God first, and then when the lights, you know, are on and you're playing, and the room feels electric, and everybody's singing along, and you know, you're starting to think like, wow, I do this really well. It's no wonder these people all came. You know, it's easy to kind of have that thing kind of switch. It's easy to get kind of starstruck ourselves, like, you know, by the lights and by being in front of everybody. And, you know, people like, oh my gosh, you did so well today. Oh, this, you know, you're such a good worship leader. And again, this comes back to that thing that I mentioned earlier. Like if we are trying to get something out of worship, that's a problem. And that's, you know, I can't remember where it is in the Bible, but it says that, you know, God will not share his glory. And in some ways that's us kind of trying to step into the limelight and take a little for ourselves. But if we're trying to get something out of it, it really just shows us that we're actually insecure. We don't know who we are, because if we knew who we were, then we wouldn't have to prove our value by being, you know, so impressive. So I think really it's obviously a heart thing, and it's a matter of being like inspecting our hearts and asking the Lord, like, keep us like on the level here. You know, I prayed this prayer, and it was kind of dumb in a lot of ways. You know, those prayers that you better mean it when you pray it. But I said, God, keep me humble. And if I won't be humble, humble me. And he's been pretty faithful. Been pretty faithful at that. And because, you know, the reality is that if you, you know, I don't think any of us wants to, you know, we don't want to be that arrogant worship leader. You know, I don't think that most people want that. I think some people end up there on accident. I don't know if they end up there on purpose, but it is remembering why we're doing what we're doing. Remembering that if we're trying to get something out of it, it means that we're insecure and we need to work on our identity and our value. Because I mean, you look all throughout the Bible. I love the story of the baptism of Jesus when he goes down in the water. He's baptized. The heavens open up. The Holy Spirit descends and rests on him, and the Father says, "This is my beloved Son. In him I am well pleased." And up until that point, Jesus had not done a single miracle. There was not a single recorded miracle in his ministry. And his ministry hadn't even started at that point. How is it that God was pleased? Why was the Father pleased with the Son before the Son had done anything? Well, it's because the pleasure of the Father doesn't have to do, it's not centered around what you do, it's centered around who you are. And so we spend so much time trying to get our, trying to answer the question, who am I, with the things that we do. Well, who am I? Well, I'm a worship leader. Like, no, that's what you do. Do you know who you are? And that's a journey. That's a journey to answer that question. Who am I?
Well, that is the question though, right? That is the driver. That's really cool. It's funny. I always laugh. I'm like, it's very easy for me to stay humble in my worship leading place because I worship lead for like 100 people and you know, it's small and janky all the time. And it's like, oh, it's easy. So it's always interesting to think about that walk. So you write songs, you teach songwriting. Do you write songs mainly for your church? Do you write with other artists? Like what is your writing experience?
Writing experience. I mean, I wrote like growing up, it was just me and a piano down in my basement. And I sat there for hours and hours and hours and wrote. And then I taught myself to play the guitar because I was homeschooled, so I didn't have much else to do besides play music. And, all I did was play music. And I eventually, you know, I wrote on my own up until I actually got to Bethel. And then that's when I started doing more co-writing. And that again is a journey because if, you know, co-writing is one of those things that is, we have a lot to learn about that a lot of times because it's, you know, you're taking your favorite song idea to somebody who hates it and they're like, yeah, I don't like this part and this part. How about we do this with that? You know, and they just feel like this precious thing just got chopped up. But there is, if you look at the songs out there, almost all of them are written by multiple writers. But really that's what it comes down to is realizing like, this is what people do, this co-writing thing. It's because it works. There's strength in it. And you can learn a lot from songwriters, other songwriters, and creativity is really, it's contagious in a lot of ways. And I remember writing with a friend of mine, a really great songwriter and worship leader from about an hour north of me named Tim Arroyo. And he and I did some writing. And I remember this session where we sat down to write one song and we ended up starting like three songs. And because our creativity was like, I had an idea which made an idea happen for him. And then which made an idea happen for me. And you find that you actually start playing off each other. And like it sort of creates this momentum, this creative momentum. And that, you know, in that one instance that turned that one song into three different songs, which was, you know, not the plan at all, but that's what happens because creativity just happens that way. And not every session is like that, but there is definitely a lot of strength in it. So, you know, so that was a big adjustment for me. You know, want to talk about like gaining your identity from what you do. Learning to co-write is a great way to learn some humility. And it's so quickly, as soon as you sit down with somebody and they're a better songwriter than you, and they listen to your song and they're like, so tell me, what do your verses have to do with your chorus? And you're like, shoot, nothing, actually. Funny you should ask. It's nothing. And so you learn to be humble pretty quick when you have people that are they can see right where you need to grow, and they go right after it. So,
do you write songs for your church?
I do. Yeah. It's, my songwriting has been, a little bit on pause for the last 6 months or so. I've been in grad school and that's been taking some of my energy, but yeah, we sometimes do some of my songs, So when I'm writing, sometimes those songs end up doing those sometimes.
How is it different leading songs that you've written versus songs that others have written?
You know, sometimes it's awesome and sometimes it's really vulnerable. And I think when you are, sometimes you lead a song, you could sing, you know, Jesus loves me, this I know, in a song, in a congregation with the right people, and it's going to blow up. And other times, you know, some songwriters, they're going to be leading their song in their church or in a church where people are not as quick to grab on and, you know, start singing along. So it can be a vulnerable thing for songwriters to be playing their own song, especially if, you know, when people don't know a song, they can't sing it because they don't know the song. And a lot of times I think it's easy for us to think nobody's saying it. Like, yes, because no one had heard it before. It's good for, you know, remember that. They didn't sing it because they didn't know it. And so it can definitely be vulnerable. And I think in a lot of ways, I've found leading your own song, you can find the parts that work and the parts that you can say, you know what, I actually think I need to go back and keep writing, because that particular section of the song, when I got to it, just it felt kind of flat compared to the rest of the song. So there's a lot to be learned about leading your songs, and it can help you finish them and help you finish songs that you thought were already finished, and then you realize they're not. And it's definitely it can be a really great experience, and you can learn from it too. And I definitely think when your song is close enough where you've got at least like, you know, at least a chorus that you can throw out and in the middle of a set and say, let me just do this chorus real quick and see, because thematically, you know, it works for what I feel like is happening in the room right now. And then you can play that chorus and see how it goes. And, you know, at least having like a section like that, that you can toss in here and there, I definitely encourage it. Cause then it can give you a good feel for what's going to work corporately and maybe what needs a little more work still.
Yeah. Yeah, I always wonder how artists can pull it off when they're writing in a vacuum, right? You're writing in rooms and writing with people, and they're like, okay, we made this record, and now we're gonna go out and tour it. Versus the worship songwriter gets to like throw it out there and be like, oh, yeah, not that one.
Yep.
not that so much. Yep. My congregation is always quick to let me know. They don't tell me personally, but they'll let me know if it's not working, because I could, you know, see the response. And
wait, is that the pastor giving me a thumbs down? Not this song. Got it.
So, so what's inspiring you right now? You said you're in grad school, so that's keeping you pretty busy, but who's stoking your creativity?
You know, that's a great question. In a lot of ways, I actually haven't been listening to a ton of music recently. I've been listening to a lot of instrumental stuff, because I find like it's been fun to just put something on and just do whatever I'm doing in the background. Somebody that comes to mind, there's a group or an artist called Oatmellow, and their album's called Soft Landing. There's a bunch of albums, but the album Soft Landing is one that I will go back to over and over again, because it's so cool, and it's a great instrumental. Like, it's kind of like electronic lo-fi with a little hip-hop, kind of some hip-hop beats in there. It's super cool, super cool one. So that's if I'm going to listen to music these days, it's a lot of that. And then of course I'll float through, you know, we're a worship album here and there, and obviously. So I don't know that I have a great, you know, like I said, in a lot of ways, like, oh, I guess I haven't been listening to much music recently.
Well, you go through seasons, you know, like if you're always busy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like I definitely, you know, have those seasons where work is flying off the shelf and everything's flying that way. And then you realize, like, oh, man, I haven't been like sometimes. So you just it's just interesting because you find inspiration in different places, you know, that always kind of keeps us going. But music is definitely one for sure. Well, yeah. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time, man. And making my editing easy by, you know, not having to edit out coughs and everything. It's just
right,
mind blowing. It's just mind blowing. So
I'm self editing, man.
Where can I hear your music?
I've got stuff up on Spotify, iTunes, or I guess it's Apple Music now.
Is it under Matt Stinton?
Yes, it is.
All right.
Man, isn't it crazy how so many worship leaders don't plan on becoming worship leaders and they just end up in that role? It's
right,
incredible.
I feel like that's pretty much everybody's story. I don't know. I know very few people who are like, yes, I decided I wanted to be a worship leader right away.
No.
Like every once in a while it comes along, but it's interesting because it really is, it's so fulfilling and it's not something that you would necessarily think is fulfilling when you're a kid. You know, or like when you're younger, you picture like being the rock star and being on stage and being all those things. And it's like what God is always doing, right? He's always taking us and molding us and being like shifting our vision from like, yes, this is what you think you want, but this is what is good. And he kind of takes you and shifts you over that way. And it's amazing. And now it's a privilege.
That's amazing. Yeah. I actually just watched the, speaking of rock stars, I watched the Coldplay documentary on Netflix last night with my kids, and it's called Something of Dreams. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a fantastic documentary. And I said to my daughter, I said, this is the best Christian band in the world. And she said, and my wife was like, they're not a Christian band. So I said, yeah, but they feel like a worship band. And it's weird how all that music somehow, like, you know, U2, Delirious, Coldplay, all that kind of anthemic rock sound, it's got like a worship vibe to it. It's interesting. And it's funny that a lot of contemporary worship music still follows in that anthemic kind of sound, that kind of drivey sound. It's just, it's interesting thought.
I know. It is interesting. I'd love to see some expansion from that, though, I must say. It was funny seeing Wilco. And granted, they're one of my favorite bands. But they definitely, like, I was just noticing just how important every musical piece was. Everything was playing different, you know, like, and granted, you have to realize, like, these guys do it for a living, right? They're practicing all the time. They're spending forever on these arrangements. But I was like, you know, the actual sound is incredible. Like, you could bring a lot of, like, those elements in and kind of step out of kind of what's the norm. And I think you see more and more, like, different worship musicians doing that, kind of grabbing different parts and moving away from that thing. But I think ultimately there's still just that kind of, like Coldplay, the band that's the biggest band in the world is making the music that is the most, like, palatable to the most people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
And so I see why that happens, but it's just kind of interesting.
Yeah. Have we got some member mail today, or are we going to be talking to someone? Shout outs. What do we got going on?
we have shout outs, Daniel. That's what we're doing now. Member mail. We'll answer no questions.
No questions for you, sir.
Just because you couldn't remember to say the words "hit it" for like That's 10 true. Years, and it was just time to be done.
I'm glad.
Well, today.
Hit it. That's a delayed reaction from the first ones that I missed.
I'm keeping that in. I'm not editing that out. That's staying.
Okay, good.
Got some great shout outs today. They came across our Facebook page, facebook.com/worshipartistry, and got a number of great ones. I'm just going to read two here. John Paul says, thank you, Jury Beloro, for being the one to lead us in the course of excellence. I witness how difficult it is to be a music director every time we work together. But as you said, everything we do is all worth it in the eyes of the Lord. I think that is that's an awesome thing to kind of recognize people who are doing leadership and working and recognizing like how difficult that really is. I think we a lot of times kind of maybe don't appreciate the role that leadership is compared to to playing. And so I love calling out worship leaders.
That is awesome.
Well,
that's really cool.
Well, hey, if you want to shout out somebody, you can do so. You can email us, support@worshipartistry.com. You can also message us on our Instagram or on Facebook. Just look up Worship Artistry. And make sure you mention the person's name and tell us, you know, how they inspire you. What makes them great? And it'll inspire the rest of us as well. If you want to go and learn a bunch of worship songs like All Creatures of Our God and King or like 500 other songs that we have on Worship Artistry, you can go try it for free with a 21-day free trial over at worshipartistry.com, where you can learn songs for guitar, bass, drums, keyboard, and vocals and have your whole team just sounding solid. Daniel?
Yes, sir.
I'll see you next week.